Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 3, Episode 5, The Whirly Dirly Conspiracy. Here's Aaron with the recap. Rick takes Jerry on a pity adventure to help bolster his self-esteem. Seeing as how Jerry is the most fragile being in the universe, Rick picks out an alien resort where it's impossible to die. Despite these safe surroundings, Jerry manages to be complicit in and also thwart several Rick assassination attempts, destroy the resort and its immortality field, get fed to an alien snake, and experience cosmic oneness before being dumped back onto Earth to return to his sad, divorced dad apartment. Meanwhile, Beth tries to throw herself into horse-based arts and crafts, but is sidetracked by Summer accidentally Clive Barkering herself in a quest for bigger boobs. What did you think of this episode, Jim?
It's kind of fallout from last episode in some ways, at least for the Jerry and Rick part. Because I think during this episode they talk about how Morty wanted Rick to take Jerry on an adventure, and then it comes out that Morty wanted that because he wanted to get away from Rick.
Right.
Who just, you know, really tore a new hole in his heart last episode with that noob stuff. And I really enjoyed it. I thought, you know, the stuff with Summer is interesting. The adventure with Rick and Jerry, I think, is something that I wanted to see and maybe didn't know that I wanted to see until I saw it. So that was pretty cool.
I still think, as we were talking, I think, in a previous season about like the worst pairings, or maybe the individual who couldn't anchor an episode by himself. And I still feel like Jerry's top of that draft. But yeah, pairing him with Rick is really interesting because, you know, Jerry needs to hear some hard truths. And Rick is a guy who's willing to dispense them.
Yeah.
And it feels like by the end of this episode that Jerry is going to maybe take some fumbling steps into growing a fucking spine and being a person that thinks about what he wants out of life instead of trying to figure out what everybody else wants and how he can get them to, you know, enable his bullshit. So I think it's great. Yeah, I but there's lots of solid laughs. I even think conceptually this thing is pretty cool with the immortality field.
Yeah. Yeah.
On this, you know, like it's a different take on a pleasure planet.
Sure, yeah, and it enables some pretty good goofs, some pretty horrible goofs as well. I liked it.
Before we get into the episode, I want to have a brief addendum to the news we had last week of Mike Bindle, the line producer of Rick and Morty, passing away. When I got home, I listened to that week's Harmontown, which is episode 350. You have 10 seconds to comply. And he does like a 10-15 minute eulogy for him at the top of the show. And everybody, because he had you know, Rob Schraub, another person that's involved in Rick and Morty, and it was a nice send off. So if you want to hear Dan eulogize his friend, I would highly recommend checking out episode 350 of Harmontown. You have 10 seconds to comply.
Let's start off with Rick and Jerry, because I feel like that's the most fun.
Poor divorced dad Jerry. We talked previously about his windbreaker look and his Titanic hat wearing.
He's got a different look going on, going affectation. On this time. Yeah.
But this like sad divorced dad apartment is something that I can relate to, even though my dad got divorced when I was a young man. I don't know if this is just a dad move, but my dad, even though he could afford better, moved into the shittiest, smallest, fucked up apartment complex in the worst neighborhood in Indianapolis. Got his car broken into, got his motorcycle stolen, and just it wasn't this bad. This is like, you know, Jerry staying at a Roach Motel place. But there's all these bits of truth that the team is calling on to assemble this, you know, divorced dad thing.
Yeah, whatever stuff he did have before he was hauled out naked from his bed is going to be gone. I mean, Rick just left the front door open. So,
although, what in this apartment would you steal?
Not much.
Because that's the other thing is the environment's filthy. Like, the shower is got mold infested, and I love the sequence where he fantasizes the mold looks like his family.
Right.
But, like, God, his microwave is filthy.
Mm-hmm.
How long has he been there? And he just, like, I feel like all he does is microwave buffalo wings and cheap cheese pizzas because it's just all the inside is covered in that greasy microwave explosion sludge.
Uh-huh.
So, like, he moved into a real shithole, and then he finds a way to dig a deeper hole and fill it full of more shit.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, maybe his, there's his prized Titanic photo.
Mm-hmm.
In the background, maybe somebody, maybe a real Rose and Jack fan would steal that.
Sure.
But, I mean, that's a statement in itself. If you're in a shitty motel like that and you just leave your front door open, I mean, people just assume.
Be my guest.
Yeah, there's this guy. I mean, why even bother? It's like going up to a car and it's like already on blocks with its door stolen. Like, are you going to really look in its cigarette lighter or cigarette ashtray for change, or are you just going to keep rolling?
Probably not.
I love how, so ostensibly the whole purpose of this is to make Jerry feel better about himself, but like Rick bails at the earliest opportunity at maintaining that facade.
Oh yeah.
It's like the very first time that Jerry says, oh, you know, I know what you're, Rick just spills the beans. Ah, you're right. Your son thought you're going to blow your head off. So I took pity on you. And then the whole realization that actually Jerry thought that Rick was going to kill him.
It's real good, yeah.
And Jerry and Rick just laying down is like, okay, so this is how you would actually react to this situation. I thought that was really funny. And the realization that it's not even worse than that, that, like, you know, Rick is all this high and mighty and act like he's taking pity on Jerry when actually it's all a lie just to get him out of Morty's hair. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. There's then, you know, they go on their adventure. They talk and they come to some kind of understanding, which I don't know if this felt quite right to me. Like, Rick has a change of heart that I don't know is warranted here, where he tells Jerry, essentially he apologizes to Jerry about putting strain on their marriage after Jerry points out that that's what he did. I don't see that as a very Rick move. It's almost seemed like a plot device that goes against his character.
All right. So I had the same thought, and I really started thinking about it because, you know, show's usually pretty smartly written and the characters are true to their arc. They've established that Rick's the kind of guy who will, you know, go out for drinks and bong hits with his worst enemy, people who tried to kill him before. And they also do a couple other things in this episode that kind of play with that concept. But, like, you know, Jerry is an inconvenience to him, and he's completely defeated him on the field of war, the family field of war here. So, like, Rick gets a couple cocktails in him and starts taking a shine to Jerry. Because the other thing is Jerry's being a little bit, you know, introspective, I guess. Like, he's for
Jerry, yeah.
Yeah, he's not trying to front. He's kind of admitting to how pathetic and terrible he is. And I think that maybe in this circumstance Rick would kind of like let up and try to be, now going, here's the thing, would Rick promise to go back and tell Beth that he's sorry for interfering with their marriage while he's super drunk? Yes. Will Rick follow through with that when he, whatever passes for sobering up for him? That's the big question.
Yeah,
like, you know, would he actually follow through? And because of the events of the episode, we're not going to find that out. There's interesting, another kind of flip side of this coin is in, you know, after Jerry betrays him and almost gets him killed in the whirly-dirly conspiracy, you know, he's feeding Jerry to this snake and he's talking a bunch of cold-blooded smack. And there's this line where Jerry's like, I realize I made a mistake. I'm never going to do it again. And Rick says, no one ever does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also a contradiction between what he says about how he views his former villains, because if he killed everyone that double crossed him, he wouldn't be able to say that. So, like, I don't know. This whole thing is so kind of like outside of, Rick is on a fake mission trying to fake bolster up his former son-in-law as a favor for his grandson. So I get, and he says a whole bunch of stuff just to manipulate Jerry. I don't know. I guess I roll with it.
Yeah, it's like super buried subtext if you really, really want to dig and give them the benefit of the doubt. I, you know, having watched it a couple times, I guess I didn't lean that far in Rick's direction. I'm not inclined, let's say, to give Rick the benefit of the doubt.
Let me ask you this. What did you think of Jerry's perspective that until a few years ago, him and Beth's relationship and the family dynamic was pretty good?
I don't see how that's possible.
Me either.
Because I don't think Jerry has changed.
No.
Much from before then. Like, everything that Beth says about the relationship
right.
makes me think that it's always kind of been like this.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just never, she just always kind of lived with it.
I wonder if, like, if I roll back, let's say, 4 years, mm-hmm. and, like, Summer isn't quite a teenager yet, and Morty's still, you know, a little boy. I feel like that, you know, when kids hit the teenage years is when you start having, you know, that's another, like, you know, it's when they're babies, it's a real pain in the ass. When they get to be teenagers, it's a real pain in the ass. I wonder if this is, like, rose-colored, you know, rose-tinted glasses that Jerry's got on, that, like,
yeah,
Beth was progressively getting fed up with him and his bullshit, but he couldn't see it, and the kids were young, and they weren't giving any problems, and they looked up to him as their dad, and Rick arriving happened to expose him for being the lightweight that he is, and also the kids started getting older, you know, Morty started doing weird shit with grandpa, so he started to get distant. I wonder if it's true from his perspective that they had the perfect marriage until Rick showed up.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry isn't super self-aware, I don't think, so the idea that he would not see the signs is totally possible. And I also think that Rick probably did put extra pressure on that marriage, right? Like, you know, maybe it wasn't that everything was roses before, but certainly now it's starting to turn to ashes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When Rick's around.
I mean, Jerry reveals himself to be a real piece of shit in a couple of different ways in this episode. First of all, like, he, you know, when Risotto Groupon first hijacks him, he, like, if acts like, oh, it'd be beyond the pale for him to conspire to kill Rick. But then Rick does some very small provocation to him, which is essentially continuing the arc of the conversation that he had before he went in the bathroom. And Jerry just literally narrows his eyes and, like, I'm going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And then because he said, he kind of makes some kind of conciliatory remarks to Jerry before they get on the whirly-dirly, then he tries to save him. And he's always trying to do this passive-aggressive, like, try to attack towards the middle. Like, he's trying to say, like, I feel like if he had just leveled with Rick and be like, you know what, you're about to be killed. Some people tried to talk me into turning you over. And, you know, we have a checkered history. This is appealing to me. You essentially have no morals. So I was just fighting fire with fire. But now I regret my actions. Let's team up. I feel like Rick would have just rolled with that. But Jerry trying to, like, keeping Rick from even finding out that he's being assassinated is where Rick is just completely fucking over it.
Yeah, I love the scenes where they just the animation, but, like, the creativity in that scene. The ride is really cool.
Yeah,
it's like this spinning series. It's something you would see an astronaut getting strapped into.
Sure,
but you're riding around the surface of it in a couple of cars, and then they play on the fear. I don't know if this is a fear of yours, but it certainly is mine. I'm always concerned that I'm going to hit my head on the bars. That when you go through a tunnel or you go under, like, a specifically, you know, crowded area of roller coaster track, I'm always fucking terrified. I, like, sort of hunch down a little bit.
I like the fact that the whirly-dirly, they can be a little bit tighter with that, because if you knock your noggin, you just come right back, and maybe that's part of the fun.
Yeah, it could be. Just have a section where everybody's head gets taken off.
Yeah, it's part of the, yeah, it's part, like, some kind of themed horror ride. And it does seem like it's a real thrill ride. Like,
yeah.
The physical deformation that Rick and Jerry were experiencing is, yeah, it's like something they'd put an astronaut through.
But it's probably a pretty risky one, too. Like, I'm looking at the nature of this ride, where it comes off the tracks, and you get these spinning rings, and it's supposed to land at just the perfect time. If you miss that, okay, well, you're in the field, you're not going to get killed instantly. But
right.
If you go flying off the tracks, you're going to go outside of the field in a falling roller coaster car,
right,
and eventually hit something and die. Like, the stakes are still extraordinarily high on that ride. Why are there gaps in the field where people's heads just stick up out of the field that protects you from dying on this insane ride?
Cutting corners, man.
You couldn't increase the diameter of that field a little bit. Maybe those aliens,
there's actually a strict height requirement, but it's like the opposite of you must be this tall. It's like you have to be this short to ride the ride, and these aliens just flagrantly ignored those advisories.
They probably should only allow certain types of life forms in there then.
True. True. Yeah. Well, like I said, if they got the sign up and they don't pay attention to the sign, then fuck them. I really like the blackest humor of the brother and sister that we've seen in the bar running around, blowing each other's heads off for fun. Mm-hmm. Like the final time the brother shoots her and she's not going to get back up because the immortality field's turned off. Holy fuck. I noticed the brother called the sister Lisa. I wonder if that was like a very stealth Simpsons reference.
Could be.
Like this is the alien version of the Simpsons having some fun at the immortality planet. I love the dialogue that Jerry and Rick have as Jerry's being fed to this carnivorous worm.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Jerry's like fed up with Rick, and as he's going to die anyway, he hits back with like, "You stole my family." And Rick shoots back, "Who got taken more when you shot 20 cc's of liquid dream killer into my daughter?" And he points out to something that I never really thought of in his theory, that like, you know, she was Rick's daughter. Mm-hmm. That means something on a universal scale. She had fucking options, and now you're stuck with this.
But how many daughters you got?
Well, true. But that's the thing is, like, it seems like in this finite curve of probability that the vast majority of Beths marry a Jerry. Because you don't see
a lot of them. Yeah.
Like, where is the badass independent woman Beth stomping around a Citadel? Because she's, like, from infancy gone on adventures with Rick. It's almost like that version of Rick that becomes the Citadel of Rick's types of Rick makes it inevitable that Beth is going to take a flyer on a person like Jerry as a way to, you know, find an absent father figure in her life, fill some kind of hole that he left in her void of her heart, or act out to try to get his attention, whatever would cause you to shack up and make love to a man like Jerry.
Yeah.
Unspeakable things, clearly.
Obviously.
I thought it was interesting that we find out that Rick is more machine than man in this episode. He's like, all limbs, his eye, significant portions of his brain, things in his chest. Like, he's augmented all the hell to the extent that he can't even board a commercial space liner.
Without being anesthetized.
Without having his neuralizer's functions blocked.
Which I guess doesn't change how I think about Rick. I've already kind of considered him a god. A
meta-human.
Anyway.
Yeah,
even if he wasn't cybernetically enhanced, I think they portrayed him as being so smart that he might as well be a god.
I think it's interesting that the second piece of Jerry being a piece of shit in this episode is his reaction that once he finds that Rick is like docile and unable to fight back, he's just that's a classic bully.
Yeah.
And he's been bullied enough to know better. It's just, and it's like a hollow victory too, because like Rick can't fight back. He's not going to remember any of this stuff. It's consequence free, which sets up the whole sequence with him and Risotto, where, you know, he does this, he's being triumphantly brave, and he's like, "You're neither. I'm beating you handily, and you're not brave because you know I'm not going to kill you because you're the vagina guy." And which causes Jerry to get, and I mean, that's the thing, that Jerry, when he gets angry enough, he actually does find a backbone, bites the guy, and he instantly regrets it. And he's saved by a hyperspace trip, which I thought is a very, very long and very cool visual sequence of these three characters essentially becoming one in space-time. And when they come to, like, Jerry and Risotto are both kind of, like, rethinking their life, and Rick shakes it off immediately.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he's got all these classy threat cybernetics, but he uses a suction cup to pull the other guy's gun to him, and he flails like you're trying to get a lure off a fishing line. You're kind of like fumbling for it before he just blows the guy's head off with his own gun. And then finally, I think it's cool that, because a lesser show would have this be like Jerry hitting rock bottom, and then, you know, he would start to make positive changes. But here in the end of the episode, even as he vows, you know, "I'm not going to play the victim card anymore. I'm not going to try to play on people's sympathies." And then Rick's like, "Hey, sounds good." But Jerry tries to change his mind, and Rick's like, "Ah, no, I believe in you, buddy. You can call an Uber, get a lift, walk, whatever, bye." It's going to be a long, if Jerry recovers at all, it's going to be a long, hard road.
Yeah, and I think there's room for it to happen. I mean, you can look at this episode and you can say what the journey that Morty has gone through has changed him. So I do believe that they will evolve characters.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly Beth has evolved. You know, that's, it's something they do. So we'll see how long it takes Jerry.
Yeah, like Morty is markedly more mature in the way he's dealing with things in this episode, and kind of becoming almost a parental figure for his older sister. It's interesting that they, you know, we've heard him talking in interviews and stuff that they want to keep this like Simpsons level where no one ever ages, and yet there's so much character development happening.
Yeah,
the character's getting sharper, more mature, more nuanced, and I don't know, maybe that'll work in a forever 14-year-old body.
I think so. So all far, right. So good.
Well, let's talk about Morty and his adventures with Summer and Beth. So they've done a lot of divorced dad commentary. And from what little I know of my experience with divorced moms is like them getting way into arts and crafts is kind of like their windbreaker move.
Okay.
And Beth doing it out of leftover hooves?
There's something grotesque. And it's not the hooves. That's not the problem.
Right.
There's something like unnatural, like Lovecraftian about the thing she's building. Because if you look at it, she's building a dog out of horse hooves.
And is she? Because I thought it was a horse, just a really shitty job of it.
I mean, maybe it is, but it's got this tail that comes way up. I don't think of horses having upward tails. I think of, you know, downward flowing. I think she's making a dog, which to me is just so unsettling. If she were making a horse out of horse hooves, I'd be okay. But although it's something like about making another creature out of it is no.
I mean, what if you made like a three-dimensional collage of a human out of toenail clippings? And not just
I mean,
that,
it's gross.
Because at first I thought it's just like, yeah, you know, when a guy puts on horseshoes, what's that, farrier? There's a learned name for it, or maybe it's just
that sounds right, but I'm
farrier. Let's go with farrier.
Yeah.
Until someone looks it up and proves me wrong. They do have like hoof, like you get a bunch of hooves, like, you know, toenail clipping types of hooves, but there's whole ass horse feet. Like, you know, you get the a couple of points of articulation, like the horse ankle, the horse forearm. And when Morty asks her about it, she doesn't respond except for say, hey, I just assure you, this is all perfectly legal.
If that's what you're wondering. Yeah.
And there's also like a half fragment of dialogue when they come back to this from a later scene where she's talking about like how she just kind of walked them out of the horse hospital.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just feel like she just got this big bag of medical waste and in some kind of insane divorced mom move. Just had to get the hot glue gun out and make her a horse dog. I mean, there's a lot of great stuff in here. Summer Cronenberging herself because she wants to have massive boobies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't exactly relate to that, but I can relate wanting to have a more masculine body when you're growing up as a teenager. And
oh yeah, especially just after you get dumped, you know, and the person moves on immediately to someone else. You look at their qualities and say, what do they have that I don't?
Exactly.
I mean, it's natural for everybody. And Summer being a teenage girl, it's probably amplified.
Yeah. And it's like that sequence of her like transmogrifying herself, I thought was a nice 10-second play on the concept of body dysmorphia.
Oh yeah.
And like plastic surgery addiction.
She had it. There was that one shining moment she had the perfect.
She had perfect.
Ratio is not the right word. That makes it sound like I think her boobs are perfectly huge. I'm talking about symmetry, right?
Yeah,
like she had the matching on the left and right. She could have just stopped there, but
they were stripper titties by anyone's definition. Yep. They were perfectly proportional, and then she had to fly too close to the sun.
Man.
And how I did like,
and then she just kept getting closer and closer to the sun.
It was neat how they did it, because like her putting her hand up to like block it is like a natural human reaction. But then this is something that Dan pointed out in the commentary, like they planned all this out, like the weight of her giant hand then pulled her face into it, and her head growing big then rolled her over so it hit her ass. It's not like, again, a lesser show, this would be a Three Stooges thing where she's just like whoop 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 and twisting and turning, but like there's physics to it.
And, oh yeah, and if you could feel it in that scene.
you could feel those big arms and titties hitting the ground. So she Cronenbergs herself, or as I think Morty says, Clive Barkered.
Yeah.
Because they're spreading the body horror around, trying to give credit where credit's due.
And I love Morty's reaction when, you know, they come out and the Beth's looking at the machine like, oh, normalize it. Surely that makes sense, right? Let's just hit that button.
Right.
Morty knows better. Morty has been on so many adventures with Grandpa Rick at this point. He knows that normal is completely relative.
It's relative to this fucking planet Earth.
Absolutely.
Let alone, I mean, and you think about like, if you've ever bought like a shoddy piece of, let's say Chinese electronics, and you read the instruction manual, probably auto-translated in English, there's some hilarity there.
Oh, yeah.
So imagine, and that's just on our planet, where we all have the same physiology, we have the same basic human needs and drives and conceptual understandings of things, mostly. You get this imported from some fucking planet where the, it's like each machine is staffed by an internal department of technical support.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because there's a little bit of boomer humor in this too, because like I did my fair share of technical support back in the day when I was entry level IT guy, and I was always amazed at how number one, people could be completely unable to follow directions.
Yeah.
Like you tell someone to click on something and you'd hear three clicks over the phone and be like, what the fuck did you just do? And also their ability to just follow directions regardless of what, like, you know, I'm pretty sure I could have gotten someone to pour a cup of coffee in a fan vent or something if I told him to do it and the person was dumb and not good with computers enough. And there's a little bit of that with Beth. Where she like frees the technical support guys, which I thought was pretty funny. And just Morty instantly realized, oh my God, like father, like goddamn daughter.
Yep. Yeah, she doesn't want to, she doesn't want to be dependent on Rick in this scene, right? Like she's her marriage is just broken up. She's trying to prove how independent she is.
Right.
So she's going to handle this herself. And I think that's a pretty natural reaction. I liked it.
But it's self-destructive because she's completely out of her depth. So it's like, is this really, like, imagine Rick coming home to, like, Summer turned inside out. Or she Cronenberg's a whole fucking world. Clive Barker's the whole fucking world because she bounces off a satellite dish or some shit.
Sure.
Like, yeah, that's really going to impress your dad.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that. I like the neighbor Gene. Like that was one of the things from the, I remember from the teaser trailer, like Morty just snapping at his neighbor, mind your own goddamn business, Gene.
Yes. And it's amazing to me what Gene does and doesn't notice about the scenario.
Oh yeah.
So he doesn't notice the exploded house, the giant Summer.
True.
He just walks up and when Morty and Beth are arguing, he goes, everything okay?
Well, this is the same
he notices the argument, but not the explosions.
To be fair, Summer had already fucked off at that point.
Uh-huh. And but the house is ruined.
This is the same neighbor. This is the same neighborhood that routinely sees like a flying saucer land and pull into the garage and everybody just watering the floor, their lawn.
Yeah,
and
but here you have the interaction with the neighbor,
that's
right?
True.
Like that's the difference. Is in my mind, like there's a neighbor standing there looking at the scenario.
Right.
And the things he sees out of place is like the relationship that's not quite right between the mother and son.
Well, and they also have that sitcom thing where they set it up to be like Tool Time.
Yeah.
You know, Tim's neighbor, I forget the guy.
Wilson.
Wilson, yeah. That you just see, like, you know, the sage, trusted, outside the family friend that can like be the impartial judge. And he starts at that interaction, that sitcom interaction, and Morty just shuts him down.
Yep.
Shuts him down in the way only an Adult Swim cartoon character can do it. Mm-hmm. But also like the idea that Morty is paying more attention to his sister than the mom is. Like he's able to instantly, once he puts two and two together, realize that, oh, this is because Ethan broke up with her. Ethan's going to take her to this camping trip. Ethan broke up with her to take this girl with big stripper titties to this camping trip. Mm-hmm. She's going to go there to, I don't know, wreak some kind of big girl revenge.
Yeah.
I think she was going to attack on Titan him, maybe.
Could be.
Or something. Something. I mean, I can't even imagine what it's like to exist as a 50-foot tall woman turned inside out.
No. I do really love the drive to the camp, though, because it's clear that Morty is trying to figure out the device as they go.
Right.
And in the process, he kills the mailman with a giant mailbox. Mm-hmm. They're driving down the road, just turning things big and small and just wreaking havoc on the neighborhood.
Which is kind of like a little micro commentary on the Smith family. You know, like everyone talks shit about Rick. But Morty has as little regard for his neighbors and the people around his life as Rick has for the entire Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a difference of degree and scale, not kind, you know?
And is it a consequence of traveling on these journeys with Rick?
Sure.
Like, does he know, well, if I fuck it up too bad, we're off to the next dimension?
Right. And Ethan, you know, like, I'm not going to say it's not a dick move to, like, dump a girl and then take another girl on the exact same date, mm-hmm. like, a couple days before. But he's 16. I don't know that he deserves to be Clive Barkered.
Yeah, the tag is
Or Carpentered, if that's the next one, next season. I don't think he deserves to be the Carpentered like we see in The Stinger. And Morty's sitting down at the fire and the s'mores and being like Michael interrogating Carlos. And that didn't got this so fucking good. It's so cold-blooded.
Yeah. No, I loved it.
But yeah, and then, you know, we got
and
the...
And then Beth and Summer reunite, and she has turned herself into the monster that Summer thinks she is, thereby somehow normalizing it. I'm not sure exactly what they're playing at. I'm neither a mother nor a daughter.
I that feels like a very sitcom-y thing. Like if you're,
it's just, it's
like if a kid wets
right?
her pants and he's all embarrassed about it, then like you wet your pants and be like, see, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
But that's fucked up and stupid. Like,
I mean, it's still a big deal. Now there are just two big deals.
Yeah. Right.
but I mean, it's a show of sympathy.
Yeah.
I think is what the real deal is.
And also you have a much better chance stopping your 50-foot tall inside out daughter.
Mm, yeah.
If you yourself are a 50-foot tall monstrous mom.
True.
You know, if she just rolls up as Beth, the Summer could attack on Titaner.
Yeah.
But she didn't because she's a good mom, as everyone points out.
Okay. Yeah. We'll go with that.
After this short break, we'll be back to talk to Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Vigna about the finer points of destroying a galactic economy. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Time for housekeeping. Cecily and I are still doing American Horror Story, the 1984 season. And also, last week, we released our first installment of our annual Halloween season scary movie podcast. That's right. Cinematic Spooktacular 3, The Search for Spook. This week, we discussed the movie Spring, Brightburn, and the classic 1978 John Carpenter slasher flick Halloween. Very appropriate for the season. Jim and I also did a preview podcast for Mr. Robot, whose final season started last weekend, this last Sunday. We'll have complete coverage of each episode every Wednesday. You can, of course, find that by searching for 2-Bit Encryption in your favorite podcast app. That's the podcast, not the security I would recommend that you run on your cell phone, for example. Also, we're covering HBO's The Deuce from The Wire creators David Simon and George Pelicanos. If you're not watching it, it's a damn shame because it's just about the best thing on TV right now. Also, in case you missed it last week, we recorded a first-run Bald movie on The Joker, a movie that everyone is talking about, and that's what's happening here on baldmove.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Joining us now is Paul Vigna. In addition to reporting on the economy for the Wall Street Journal, he's also written The Age of Cryptocurrency and the Truth Machine, the Blockchain and the Future of Everything. Paul Vigna, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Doing real well. Hey, we have kind of like a rigmarole we do here with our guests just to kind of get the audience.
A rigmarole?
Oh, man.
If you didn't say rigmarole ever once before... I'm not even sure if I should do this podcast at this point.
Tell him we did.
Yeah,
please
we did.
Tell me you
or
did.
Maybe we just owe you some fractional bitcoins for the intellectual property. Right. But yeah, this rigmarole, just to kind of get you introduced to the audience and vice versa, what is your history with Rick and Morty?
My history is probably like everyone else's history, is that at one point, I think I might have heard of the show before I saw it, and then kind of randomly came across a clip of it somewhere and thought, wait, are we allowed to curse on this podcast?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. And thought, what the fuck is this? You know, and then saw two or three other clips and then just said, oh, my God, and had to go back and just find everything and watch the entire run of the show. So that's really my history, is just, you know, somebody kind of came across it at random and just fell in love with it.
What's your favorite?
I think it's brilliant.
What's your favorite episode?
Favorite episode is probably Infinite TV.
Oh yeah,
do you have interdimensional cable? Yep.
Do you?
Yeah, interdimensional cable.
Are you a volume one or volume two guy?
I don't even remember.
Yeah,
which
it's tough. It's tough.
You're exposing me already.
Yeah,
I couldn't name.
I forget
which
that
one.
I think it's probably volume one, right? Just the one with the commercial that's the takeoff on the Lucky Charms.
Yes.
And the kids are eating the leprechaun.
Yes, that's volume one.
It's so sick and demented and ridiculous. That to me is like what's perfect about this show, is that it is just, it's just absolute ridiculous satire, but it's also kind of brilliant. And I just, Interdimensional Cable is just, that is Infinite TV. That is just so, that's what I love about this show. So that's probably my favorite episode.
Good choice. I love the I see demons. I see demons as they're eating his stomach.
Right. Oh, and he's talking. Like, I love the way like the dialogue goes on, right?
Yeah.
And they do this a lot, right?
It's coming out of my stomach acids. Going, why would you want this?
Why would you want this? This is horrible. Why would you do this? Like, and they're just eating and eating and eating. It's oh my God, it's so good. Yeah.
So let's talk about the Whirly Dirly conspiracy here. What do you think of this episode? There's so many topics to talk about. Teenage mom, daughter strife, divorced dad, depression. Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
It's, and again, this episode is kind of like the issues that they kind of explore are really serious and in some cases extremely dark. I mean, about suicide and depression and teenage angst and all that stuff. And it is just, you know, like ridiculous, hysterical.
Uh-huh.
The most brutal part of the whole episode, actually, I think, is when you have the two little kids,
yes,
the little brother, and he's shooting her and she comes back to life. But then when the protection goes off, he shoots her for real.
Uh-huh.
And she dies.
Yeah, it's just something happened in the margins.
Dark.
And then they linger on it for a moment, and they say, right, "Lisa, are you getting back up?" That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is dark.
That kid's going to need
really
some
dark,
some intensive alien therapy for sure.
Right. Right. And it's a great episode because you know, it breaks down Jerry, who is, as much as he's the worst character, he's also kind of one of the most interesting because he's so bad. Oh, you know what else I love? I'm sorry, I'm getting carried away. The other episode that's great. Oh, it's the same episode now that I think of it. It's when when Jerry sees what he could have been.
Oh, yeah.
The universe where he's really famous. Yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry. All right, we can come back to that.
He's doing coke with Kristen Stewart and he's got a needle out of his coming out of his heart.
Right. But that's Jerry, right? Jerry's this terrible sad type character, but he's also kind of this rich character for them to explore. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. There's a little Jerry in all of us. I mean, we've all kind of been down on our luck at times. We felt bad for ourselves at times. You know, if you can't see any of Jerry in yourself, you're 100% lying to yourself about who you really are.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what makes him a very relatable character. So this episode's great because they break him down by taking him to a place where he can't be harmed. And he manages to completely destroy it.
Yeah. This is where you bring the most fragile being in the universe and he still fucks it up.
Right. And he still fucks it up, right? He hates his father-in-law, but he feels sorry for his father-in-law. And then he's vindictive and he's trying to kill him. And that just destroys everything about the place. And then he's getting eaten by the horrible creature. And that's great, too, where he's getting eaten by that horrible snake creature. And Rick is just casually watching it. And you think, oh, my God, Rick's going to let this guy die. Rick has no compassion. And then Rick seems to, but Rick doesn't. Yeah. So that the whole way they kind of break Jerry down and bring him back is to me, very interesting.
I wonder why that he doesn't feed Jerry to the snake. Is it just because it would bum Morty out? Like, you know,
Morty. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, did he really just need a living thing in that goo? And that's why, like, was he really going to let him die? And the answer, of course, is absolutely. Absolutely, right? I mean, these are infinite universes, infinite versions of yourself. He knows that. He can go to any other universe and get another Jerry. He doesn't care about their lives.
Well, plus
he's proven it.
They had that Jerry Brie episode where they established there's like a Jerry daycare and there's a level where all the Jerrys have been abandoned. So you could just swing by there, tip the lady a little bit extra to look the other way, take home one of those, a derelict Jerrys, and boom, bang, you're back in business.
Right, exactly. So clearly he would have let Jerry die. He just needed a living organic thing, you know, covered in goo like he explained it.
I also think that there's probably like 100 different ways that Rick could have gotten back to the facility without breaking a sweat and without feeding Jerry to the snake. He just decided to do that because he wanted to fuck with Jerry.
Yeah, right. Because it was convenient, right? The thing was there.
Right.
Right.
I had some questions because it's we haven't had like you know, you write for the Wall Street Journal, you get pretty in depth in a lot of economic matters, especially kind of like future economic matters like crypto, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, etc. So I thought it was a unique opportunity to ask your opinion on things that happened in the show in the past. For example, the season three premiere, the Rick Shank Redemption, Rick destroys the entire federal. The Galactic Federation's economy by setting their currency to zero, worth $0, which causes everybody to rebel and establish pants as a new galactic currency. Is that is anything like that remotely possible in our little sliver of the universe here on planet Earth?
The answer is yes, and it's one of the reasons why I absolutely love this show and I think it's brilliant. Because they do shit like that. I mean, it's really smart because it's absolutely true. And you look for the parallel. What's the parallel? The parallel is actually the financial crisis in 2008, where every bank around the world was sitting on what they thought was an asset base worth trillions of dollars, right? They all had their balance sheets, their ledgers, and they said, well, we have these assets on it that are worth this, and we have these assets that are worth this, and we have these assets that are worth this, and the collective worth is billions of dollars, and we're a well-capitalized bank, so we can go out and loan money, you know, X times that. And they call it leverage. Mm-hmm. When you have more loans outstanding than you have collateral on your books, but you know you're going to get paid back because there's a certain value to all of it, right?
Right.
This was what the financial crisis exposed, was that all of that was completely made up and arbitrary. And there was a period of time, and this is why the financial system seized up in September of 2008 after the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Is what happened was Lehman Brothers was saying, we have assets on our balance sheet that are worth X billions or trillions of dollars or whatever it was. And when push came to shove, it wasn't. And when it wasn't, every other bank realized that what they thought they had on their balance sheets was not worth what they thought. And even worse, what their counterparties were claiming they were worth. They didn't know if they were worth it anymore. They couldn't trust anybody else's accounting. And when that happened, the entire global financial system seized up like a car, mm-hmm. like an engine would seize, and the whole thing just came to a crashing halt. And that happened. It was real. And what it showed was that these values that we put are completely arbitrary. And when Rick just changed one digit, and what's funny about that episode, too, is like he goes through this entire incredible rigmarole. caught myself there.
I owe you, I owe you another fractional Bitcoin. Jesus.
Right. Yeah, another one. Right. You know, there's entire convoluted process of killing people to get in their heads. And you think it's all this complicated stuff building up to something gigantic. And then he just hits the one button that changes the digit from a one to a zero. And the world goes, to shit. Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, it absolutely is true. What we consider money, what we consider value, all of that stuff is arbitrary, and it is. I'm not kidding you. If you sit there and think about it long enough, which is what I've been doing covering Bitcoin for the last 6.5 years, you realize that all of it is faith-based.
Let me ask you this, because there was something I saw that was kind of frightening on your Twitter timeline when I was perusing it the other day. There was an article
about the Giants.
That's New York City's problem with the Colts. My Colts have the problems of their own. There's an article that I guess a colleague of yours, Caitlin Long, wrote about the U.S. dollar being under stress. And she asserted that, like, you know, so what you were talking about in 2008 was like there's a bunch of subprime mortgage leveraging. But what she mm-hmm. asserts in this article is that, in fact, the U.S. dollar is being shorted the same way, that that there is some kind of accounting audit that revealed that the average treasury bond had been leveraged like 2.21 times.
Oh, that article. Sure.
And
right.
So like, is that seems like it's even worse, because like, you know, that thing blew up around subprime mortgages and there's cause of credit, but like,
right.
This feels like it was very similar. That's what caused me to think of this question, is like, holy cow. What happens when our actual currency is being devalued that way? Like how panicked on a scale of one to holy shit should we be about this, Paul?
I don't know, 3 or 4. I mean, not very panicked.
Okay.
Seriously.
All right.
But now that doesn't mean that the issue isn't legitimate. All that really means is that when push comes to shove, the government and the central banks are not going to let the system fail. That was the real lesson of 2008. Excuse me. Is that the, you know, what should have happened in 2008, honestly, if we had really open and free markets, is every bank would have been put into bankruptcy. They all would have failed. They all would have collapsed.
What would that have done? What would have been the result of that to the worldwide economy?
You know, people say, oh, it would have been 10 times worse. My personal opinion is it wouldn't have been. It might have been, you know, a little bit worse than what actually happened. But what would have actually happened also is that all that bad debt would have cleared out and you could have started over. And that would have been better in the long run. All the big banks would have been put into bankruptcy. They would have been broken up. The various pieces sold off to whoever could buy them. And you would start to rebuild the financial system from a lower base. It would have been better. That didn't happen. And because the government and the central banks came in and saved it. And that is the enduring lesson, to get back to your question. The enduring lesson is that the governments of the United States and the world and the central banks of the world will step in and save the system, which is why I say the panic level is only about a 3 or 4. But the issue is real. The issue is that there are more people claiming to hold assets in the financial global capital markets than there are assets. It's called rehypothecation. I'm pronouncing it badly. But what happens is I issue a bond. I sell it to you.
And this is the U.S. Treasury bond. This is supposedly the safest investment you can make.
Bond, safest investment on the planet.
Yep.
You hold it. Somebody wants to borrow it because they want to leverage a bet. They want to make another bet against something else, and they need some collateral. So they borrow it from you for some period of time, a week, 2 weeks, 3 months, whatever it is. So I own it. It's on my balance sheet. I sold it to you. I have that credit. You own it. You've lent it out to somebody. That process can go on several times to the point where that one bond is now sitting in various guises on several different balance sheets. Normally, that's a ridiculous system, but it normally works. What happens is when a couple of people have to cash in their chips at the same time, you get problems, which is what happened in the financial markets the last week or two. And the Fed had to come in and kind of throw some liquidity around and smooth it over. And they did it. And that's why nobody panicked. Well, in 2008, they weren't expecting it. And the whole thing just seized up at once. And they had to come in and scramble to do it.
Gotcha.
That's why you had the problems.
It seems like from a layperson or something from sitting outside, it's like it seems like if everyone's aware of this problem, there should be a way to like account for this or keep people from doing it if it's actually bad. Is there, should I draw a conclusion from the fact that everyone knows about this and no one's doing anything about it?
Oh, you naive cartoon loving nerds. how precious of you. Yeah, man, of course it's a problem. Look, and I know this is a Rick and Morty podcast and not a financial markets podcast, so we don't have to go too far into it. But
the cartoon-loving nerds need an education. Give it to them, Paul.
Yeah. the issue is that over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 decades, the markets have expanded rapidly, and the technology to manage that has not kept up. And you've kind of had just one jury-rigged solution after another, where to the point where right now the entire global market is this just incredibly convoluted Rube Goldberg-like machine, that parts of which are built on code that is probably 40 or 50 years old. And nobody has taken the time to update the entire, because updating the entire system would be very expensive and time consuming. And they've made it work well, quote unquote, well enough. So that's why nobody has bothered to rebuild it, re-engineer it. But yeah, it's in need of re-engineering. It's in need of rebuilding. And that was one reason why Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies seemed so attractive when they first came on the scene, is because the promise of them was this sort of cleaner technology and this better system. Hasn't quite been proven out yet, but ultimately that's kind of what the real sort of attraction of those cryptocurrencies are.
I got a follow up on that. So like just to get a scope for my own personal curiosity, how many global financial collapses would it cost to actually rebuild the system in a great, because I'd say it's too expensive to do, but like trillions of dollars are lost in the last collapse. Like, is it more expensive than that? Is it actually cheaper to just let the thing for 12 years and fail every decade or two? Or
yeah, I mean, look, the answer to that is self-evident. We had a crash in 2008 and they didn't rebuild the system. It was cheaper for them to paper over the problems. To answer your question, what would it take? It would take something magnitudes worse than 2008.
God, that's
which is
terrible.
Exactly. Yes.
So this is a kind of leads up to my next question. In season two, there's this episode where they get on a purge planet. Look who's purging now. And, you know, long story short, at the end, there's this peasant class that's been liberated from this rich overseeing ruling class. And their economy essentially gets devastated. And Rick, as he's leaving in a spaceship, suggests they try bartering. And they evolve from a like feudal agrarian barter system to essentially laissez-faire capitalism in the space of about 30 seconds. And I was wondering if Paul Vigna was there and he had your pitchfork and you had your straw hat and your step forward to say, no, this is, you had your clean slate. You already had the magnitudes worse. Everyone, so many people did. What would you recommend these people institute?
There's no doubt, as noble as I think I am and as honest a player as I think I am, and I think I'm certainly a decent person, there's no doubt that I would do one of two things. I'd either propose something that is completely unworkable and wouldn't work and people would hate it and would hate me, or I would propose something that absolutely would benefit me above everybody else and eventually people would come to hate me, and either way I end up being the next hated person. There's no way that I would suggest something that is actually workable, that also is completely equitable and fair and would create a, you know, sort of utopian society. It just wouldn't. The reality is those things just, they don't work.
So capitalism is as close as we get to that.
Probably, you know, probably. But again, infinite universes, somewhere there's a version of me that would promote something that would work.
Just got to get a portal gun and find that Paul.
Yeah, maybe we should see an episode where, you know, Rick and Morty goes deeper. Maybe you could talk with Dan and Justin and see if you could consult on an episode like that.
Yeah.
Oh, I should. They need that. They did the real, actually, they don't need me. They don't. I'd like to think that they need me, but they clearly don't.
Paul, is there tell our listeners where they can keep up with you on the internet, and if there anything that you any project you're working on that you want to let people know about?
Sure. I mean, look, Twitter is the obvious place, just at Paul Vigna. If you want to keep up with my rantings about Bitcoin and the giants and the economy and I don't know whatever else, when Rick and Morty comes back, I'll talk about Rick and Morty. Amazon, if you go to Amazon, I've written a couple of books, two about Bitcoin, one about The Walking Dead, which sounds just like, I tell people, that it's, oh, you've written books? Yeah, I've written books. What are they about? Bitcoin and The Walking Dead. And people say, they look at me like, what? How does that, you know? But when you think about it, they're actually not that dissimilar.
Okay.
Well, because, you know, Bitcoin people are you know, but there's an overlap.
Mindless zombies? Overlap. What is it? What are you?
Well, it's the apocalyptic death cult, you know, in both cases. It's really not that dissimilar. And I'm attracted to apocalypse stories. So that's why I think I'm interested in both topics to an extent. So they're not that dissimilar. Yeah, I've written a couple of books about Bitcoin, one about The Walking Dead. You can find them on Amazon. And then obviously the Wall Street Journal, where I write, where I get paid, my day job. So I'm always on the Wall Street Journal. If you want to go on that website, WSJ.com, you can find me and much better writers than me too. So if you go for me, you'll probably find someone who's even better. And then you'll like it and you'll think, oh, wow, these guys are smart. Maybe I should subscribe. Not for Vigna, but for somebody else.
I will link those in the show notes for the convenience of the listener. I appreciate you coming on, Paul, talking some econ, talking some Rick and Morty. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, let's get back when season 4 comes on.
Let's do it.
Human music. I like it.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, Jim, are you ready to once again plot to the future?
Yeah, let's do it.
Of course, this is where we open a portal to dimension BM77 to access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes. Potentially, if that doesn't sound like your bag, bail now. Up first, we actually have a bit of news that we didn't cover in the news section because it's also a little spoilery. It's the expanded trailer for Season 4. Previously, we got a little bit of a teaser and like a short scene. But this is a full trailer. It's about 90 seconds long. We're going to talk about it here in a minute, but I want to talk about some meta stuff around it because it also confirms that Rick and Morty is coming back in November 10th, which is a Sunday night at 11:30 p.m., and there'll be 5 new episodes. Now, part of the internet cares about Rick and Morty lost its shit a little bit when they heard that because people were afraid we'd just get this half season because it's, you know, Lord knows Rick and Morty has been plagued with delays and fits and starts throughout its history. And the trailer kind of leans into that with the "it's the half the season you deserve" talk. I don't know why they did it intentionally in that way and inflammatory, but Erica Hayes, one of the directors for Season 4, confirmed that Season 4 is indeed 10 episodes long. I'm going to include that tweet in the show notes if you want to confirm for yourself. What's your analysis of this? What does this mean for the Season 4 schedule?
So I assume, like, I don't know, every show that's ever come before it, the Rick and Morty is going to be taking a break for the holidays.
Yeah.
To not ruin people's holidays, especially the podcasters that are maybe be covering the show.
Right.
Yeah, so they'll do one a week for 5 weeks, November 10th through December, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And they'll break, and they'll come back in the new year with 5 more.
Yeah, I mean, typically this is like anywhere from mid-January to like late February when they come back. If you are a fan of Rick and Morty from the very beginning, then you'll know in its first season, they released the season in batches of 3, where they released 3 episodes and went off for Christmas, came back in mid-January for another 3, took another break, came back in April for the final run of like 4 weeks. So there's precedent for this, and you're right. Like every television show that premieres this late in the year, I know American Horror Story has done it a couple of times, but a lot of them takes that like mid-holiday break and gives us a break, which is nice. Now, the other thing I thought was interesting, this November 10th date is a full week earlier than the Adult Swim Fest.
Yeah, that's which weird.
One of the things in the previous announcement of Rick and Morty Season 4 was that the Season 4 will premiere at Adult Swim Fest. I mean, I don't know how many people bought tickets to that with the idea that they'd be able to do a screening, but I wonder how they're going to square that.
Yeah, that's pretty shitty.
Yeah.
If I were, you know, a huge Rick and Morty fan,
if.
And I were attending that, and I were attending that festival,
uh-huh.
I'd probably be there for that. At least a good portion of why I bought my ticket. So,
yeah, and now you're going to see it. So there's one way they could square this, which is what they're really going to premiere is the first episode of the next 5 batch,
oof.
Which will be a pretty sizable premiere. Like that you'll be getting it weeks, if not like a month and a half, 2 months in advance of when anyone else is seeing it. But like any other way, like the other thing,
I seriously doubt that's what they'll do.
The other thing is that they could premiere the second episode. So like it comes out the next
before,
night.
Yeah.
So they're just going to screen the second episode, but that's still a little, you know,
it's not really what they promised.
Yeah.
I would be disappointed.
Little thunder stolen, I think. Mm-hmm. By themselves? They stole their own thunder, Joe.
I know. It's really weird.
Yeah. It's a very Rick thing to do. I don't know if that's... if rolling the way Rick does is the best way to take care of your fans. But the big bullet point for me is that Meeseeks are making an appearance and not just a cameo. They're in a couple of the scenes in the trailer. There's one where they're having a struggle for a gun in Rick's spaceship with Morty in a full Nazi regalia and Gearhead in the back seat. And there's others where they're like, looks like they're just multiples of them rampaging or as through Main Street, wherever the Smith's family lives on Earth. I'm excited because Meeseeks are like one of the things that really sucked me into the series. And, you know, four seasons later, bringing them back other than the cameo, I'm there for it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of returning characters. Like you said, Gearhead's shown. He gets shot in the head, actually, at one point. Very Pulp Fiction style.
Okay. There's a lot of people getting shot in the head in this trailer.
Yeah. Mr. Poopy Butthole shows up in this trailer.
And he's
so.
It looks like he's a college professor, and he's got his cane. And then, like, all of his students in the amphitheater, come at him with kung fu stances, and he starts like Kingsmaning them with his cane.
Yeah,
you know, like
that makes sense.
Yeah, that's something he does. I like the one where he says, "Lab coat, rip off Doctor Strange." And
that's
a
my favorite line from the trailer.
Did you know that Dan was actually brought in to consult on?
Yeah,
Doctor
but
Strange?
He said he was there one day. They didn't use any of his stuff. I don't think this is self-referential of Dan.
I think it's a little self-referential.
Okay.
But,
it was easily my favorite line of the entire trailer.
And it just comes off and and that might tie into, because there's one point where Rick's saying, yeah, you're right, I could get used to this magic, because it looks like he's going through
kind of magical gun,
some kind of steampunk high fantasy adventure, and that is exciting, like Rick mixing the arcane, adding the arcane to his element.
Oh, and you know he's going to be super skeptical at first, and it'll be good.
Well, also, like, if they're, to me, I guess... magic, I roll with the Asimov description, which is advanced technology is magical.
Yeah.
So, like, is there something so advanced that Rick doesn't understand it, or is there actually some kind of magical force that is outside the laws of his physical understanding? Or they're just playing some fucking video game, or this is, like, an elaborate fantasy D&D campaign he's running. Like, all those things are in the veins of Harmon and Roiland, and like, you know, D&D campaigns are all up in Harmontown. Fucking Harmon Quest is an animated version of Harmontown just with D&D. Came up in Community a lot, so I'm excited to see them explore that high fantasy concept.
It looks like Morty's gonna have a lot of trouble this coming season. He seems to be shit on evermore by Rick. You know, he's being turned into some beast that Rick is going to have to hunt down if he leaves his bomb on too long.
Yep.
He's also dangling from a cliff at one point, and Rick's very much just taunting him with having the only hover chair.
This must be one of his Morty adventures, and he's like, yeah, fuck you.
Right.
I love how the Morty card's coming back, and it's like, he said something yeah, we're going to consider this one of yours, because I guess Morty is like, it's a Rick adventure, but he's had enough of his fingerprints on it Rick's like, nah, fuck this. I'm punching your card. Summer and Beth are engaged in some sort of blood sport involving like golf clubs and crowbars can lids on an airport tarmac, I think. Morty gets a dragon. And like I said, tough year for Morty, because not only all of the things you mentioned, but as I mentioned, he's flirting with Nazism too. So that's scary.
Yeah,
fascism,
and he's dying in one episode, which has some really good lines in it too. You know, the people who die don't normally complain. Who are dying don't normally complain about it. And Morty asks if that's true. He says, "I don't know. I'm around people who die a lot faster.
They're getting atomized in the dust, or crushed by or exploded, or I believe that about Rick. It looks like it's going to be of a piece of the rest of Rick and Morty, which is excellent news.
Everything I saw encourages me that this is going to be a really high quality season.
Plus, behind the scenes, Dan and Justin seem like really happy with the process they got, and they're feeling like super, like what I've heard is they're already hard at work on season 5, which implies that we're going to get these with a much more regular process, and that they found the way to, you know, get both sides. Because I think Rick and Morty needs both the Justin craziness and the Dan heart and, you know, consistent narrative arc to actually thrive. Yeah. So being able to, you know, get that two-headed Hydra properly yoked and going in the right direction is just music to the Rick and Morty fan heart that I have. And that's your trailer talk. I will, in case you've missed it somewhere, this just came out yesterday. I will put this in the show notes if you want to see the trailer and the statement by Erica Hayes. Check the show notes, because that's where they're going to be. There's a couple points I thought was interesting talking with Chris Parnell and Erica Hayes, who's one of the lead artists on Rick and Morty. I was a little bit disappointed, and I don't know how you ask this question delicately, but I felt like Dan could have. I wish someone had asked, I want to ask, someone asked Chris, like, what he feels like everyone assigning all these, like, broadly speaking, beta male roles to him. Like, is that fuck with you? Or, like, is he, like, the most supremely confident, self-assured person that he's like, yeah, I've got this voice, but I'm rich and I've been on Saturday Night Live and nobody could take, like, I just feel like it's like if you were growing up and you're a child star and you always got cast in the fat kid role,
yeah,
like that's got to do something to you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like
Chunk from
every
Goonies.
Once in a while we make fun of Paul Giamatti, just occasionally. And it's because, you know, he's the most, like, schlubby, ordinary dude. He's an incredible actor. He's extremely successful. Does the types of roles he gets weigh on him? I don't know. Yeah. Probably. I would think so.
I mean, the only difference between him and, like, the cable guy, Larry the Cable Guy.
Oh, okay. That cable guy.
Is he's got a serious dramatic career. Uh-huh. And several awards that attest to that. But, like, visually looking like that, you know, they're like they're kind of closer than they are different.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I don't know how you delicately talk about that, or like, hey, why does your voice keep being cast with these, like, twerpy dudes? But they didn't actually talk about his performance really at all. I did find out something surprising about Clancy Brown. Who you might know as the big scary guard from Shawshank Redemption. You might know him as, is it the Kurag?
The Kurgan, yeah.
The Kurag from Highlander. I feel like the big dudes like that, big scary dudes like that, they're either like super nice or they're complete monsters. And turns out Clancy Brown, nice guy.
Yeah. Bit of a hippie.
He's referred to as a chill hippie.
Yeah, that's, I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, that's a little surprised, but I feel like that's a cool look for him. There's also, like Dan mentioned, that this episode, like, Justin was kind of disconnected from the writing process. He had one request, which is he wanted to see a giant summer burst out of the garage. And, like, Dan was, like, you know, butthurt and upset about, like, how, but then he realized, like, you know, it's one of those things, like, they say in therapy, you know, if you feel like you're trapped in your life, then this trick is to see your life as a result of the choices you've made, and the fact that you're still living it as a choice you're made. And like, Dan embraced that, like, you know, I'm going to choose to see this as a choice I'm making creatively to just follow Justin's heart. And it leads to an episode like this.
And he also got to keep at least one line inserted in this when they're in the time vortex.
Yeah.
Time meld.
Yeah, which one was that?
I got shit on my ass.
Yeah.
That was a Justin thing.
As Rick and Jerry are, like, making love. As the lion gazelle / lovemakers. I thought that was pretty.
Yep.
The thing I thought was also interesting is, like, when they were doing all the immortality field fights on the roller coaster, which I thought was a pretty good standalone set piece.
Yeah.
He lamented that, like, they really didn't think to go really lean into the immortality field implications until very late in the process. So he felt like there was a lot of immortality field insanity that they left on the table.
Well, they could revisit the planet.
Yeah.
You know, they could always come back.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it's like this show is not, you know, I almost wonder if it wasn't better that they didn't, because this the show is not lacking for insane over-the-top violence.
True.
In any particular season, and you know, we just had tons and tons of gore and death and blood last episode. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was interesting is this is a, Dan points out, this is a Summer and Beth story, but Summer is not present for most of it.
You're right.
She's sort of just ancillary to her own story here.
Her body being out of control is almost like a MacGuffin.
Yeah.
That brings a focus to Morty and Beth's relationship.
Right, in a surprising twist. Yeah. And it seems like Morty has really evolved. Morty, of all the characters, I think has come the farthest. He, and maybe specifically after last episode, where we saw him betrayed, sentenced to death by Rick.
Right.
He's kind of written Rick off in a way, right? He needs a break from Rick, so yeah. He sends him off to going out with Jerry. It seems like he's there taking care of his family when that should be part of Rick's role. That should be part of his parents' role. None of them are doing it, and so Morty has to step up. Something he probably couldn't have done two seasons ago. He'd be completely incapable of.
There's a one other thing, a point from the commentary that I thought was interesting, which is Dan saying that he thinks Gene comes back later. I don't think he comes back later this season. We're in a spoiler thing, so I don't think it's... Yeah, it is. Whether it's a spoiler or not, you're in a spoiler section. I wonder if they're going to bring him back for future episodes. And in what capacity? Will it always be someone telling him to shut the fuck up?
Right.
Or will he actually mature into like a Wilson-type character?
I don't know. It seems like both of those are sort of hacky ways to go.
I do think that eventually, with seven more seasons, they'll need to bring other people into the secret, kind of the way they talked that, like, one of the secret sauces is that Rick and Morty don't have to sneak around with Mom and Dad. Well, I mean,
yeah,
a little bit, but they know that, like, Rick's taken him on intergalactic adventures and everybody's been in the spaceship, and everybody, I think, at this point, except for maybe Beth. No, Beth has been to the other planet because she went to the wedding.
Yep.
And
the party with Logic last time, I assume that was off planet.
I do feel like now that the whole Earth has been like under the domain of an alien empire, that more people need to kind of like be into the little secret. Like maybe a Golden Fold, maybe Neighbor Gene, maybe a Principal Vagina. Mm-hmm. It's the natural thing is like get a little bit more people into that mix.
Yeah, that could be fun.
There was one other thing I noticed just in like some of the other writings of this episode is people pointed out that Summer has gotten really comfortable with Rick's world to the extent that she knows like his private codes to some of his hidden caches. Mm-hmm. She knows where the good stuff is located. It's not like weird or intimidating to her. So there's like an implication that she's been along on some more of his adventures and she's been Mortying it up a little bit.
Makes sense. They always have a good time when they go out.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @baldmove. See you next time.